Who knows why I'm feeling things, you know? Ooga booga.
I'm off to patrol my newsfeed for a while. There are just so many stupid people out there waiting to affirm my intellectual superiority. I will find them, and I will destroy them with my vicious rhetoric. And sent! Now everyone on Facebook will know how things really are. Oh, somebody replied to my post. They refuted all of my arguments. People are gonna read my status and then side with them! Ugh, I hate when I have to monitor Facebook all day.
You know the guy's name's on the baseball team?
Yes.
Well, go ahead. Who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the guy's name.
Who?
The guy playing first.
Who?
The guy playing first base.
Who?
The guy on first base.
Who is on first?
What are you asking me for? I don't know.
Now, wait a minute. I'm
asking you who's on first.
That's his name.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
That's it. That's his name.
Well, you ain't said nothing. I ain't asked you nothing.
You did.
You know the guy's name on first base?
Sure.
Well, tell me the guy's name on first base.
Who?
Boy, there was less blah 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 in this country, there'd be a lot more blah blah blah.
Oh yeah? Well, I think that blah 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 isn't such a bad thing. And that means I think that blah 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 is good.
I'm not mixing up anybody. Now, what's the guy's name on first base?
Now, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know.
He's on third. We're not talking.
Wait a minute.
Whoa.
Now, let's not
whoa.
How did I get on third base?
You mentioned his name.
I mentioned his name?
Yes.
I don't know anybody's name on the team. How could I mention a guy's name?
You did. You just mentioned it.
Hey, man, this article you just posted is completely false for all kinds of reasons, but I'll just state a few. Blah, 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 and blah. Also, you're a blah for ever thinking it in the first place.
Wow, you are so right. I am completely wrong in the way that I think.
Thanks for pointing that out and showing me that I am a complete moron for ever thinking that in the first place.
You got an outfield?
Naturally.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask you.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Well, go ahead. Tell me.
Tell you what?
Tell the fielder's name.
Why?
Because I want to know! Because!
Oh, he's center field. You know these players as well.
Who's in center field?
No, who's on first?
What's on first?
What's on second?
I don't know.
And like five people liked my reply to his ridiculous status update. It was the funniest thing of all time. And then he deleted my comment as soon as he got back online.
Man, some people are so dumb.
Yeah, they're just asking for it.
Oh, I know. I can't believe you guys missed it. Anyways, I deactivated my Facebook again, but I had to
look,
say
will something. You pay off the first base for every month? You get a receipt from the guy?
Sure.
How does he sign his name?
Who?
The guy you give the money to.
Who?
The guy you give the money to.
Well, that's how he signs it.
That's how who signs it?
Yes.
Who I come?
That's it.
Who? You gotta get a receipt from the guy, don't you?
Get one, Lou.
Congratulations. We hereby award you the title of Best Online Comment Debater.
Thank you, I worked very hard for this. So do I get a prize?
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl. We like sports and we don't care who knows.
Football,
tennis,
hockey, golf.
The game is starting, everyone is here. I got my snacks, my friends, and a beer. Just two normal guys hanging out, having fun. Right, guy number two?
Yeah, guy number one.
E
to the S
to the P
to the N is all I watch cause I'm the man.
If my team loses, I'll be mean all night. If you tell me to relax, we'll get in a fight.
Watching sports with girls is a pain. They don't know the rules, there's no time to explain.
Single,
double,
triple,
home run.
For the celebration, I'll shoot my gun.
I like my friend, he's a real guy's guy. He's not a loudmouth like that c-hole Steve.
Hi everyone, welcome back to School Sucks Podcast for November 25th. In our Trivium series, Gino Denning and I had a discussion about how a conversation, a debate, an attempt to communicate ideas and information to somebody else can spin out of control and into confusion if the whos and the whats, etc., are not clarified up front. In the fast-paced world of online debating, people rarely take time to do this, and I think we've all witnessed what can happen. Maybe you've even been a part of something like that. Maybe I have, okay? So, that applies more to the Trivium method of critical thinking. First, we make non-judgmental observations. We work with those observations to form something that is consistent and coherent, and then we are able to translate that into effective communication. Well, you know, interpersonal communication, we find, is not much different. And that non-judgmental observation is often missing from a lot of interpersonal interactions between friends, family, people in romantic relationships, Facebook, everywhere. And the same process applies. So that's what we're going to be discussing on the show today. Following from our introduction to Daryl's process of merging the trivium method with nonviolent or voluntary communication, we're going to go into some detail and we're going to discuss some processes, a healthy and helpful process, and we're going to contrast that with some of the elements of a far more common but less than optimal process of communication. So this will be accomplished through a detailed discussion of the abbreviation OFNR, Observations, Feelings, Needs, and Requests, and the four Ds of disconnected communication: demands, diagnoses, denial of responsibility, and deserve-oriented language. Oh, there's one more thing that I would like to add. If you're not able, like maybe you're listening to this and you're, I don't know, watering your garden or doing your laundry, something is just taking a little bit of your attention away, you're giving a little bit less than 100%, you might hear something that is a little bit startling. So I just want to clarify this up front. There will be a segment about halfway into the show where I'm talking about myself, and then I switch without much of a transition into a fictional example, and you will hear me ask a question: why do I spend my money on gambling, coke, and strippers? Well, you know, there are people who are supporting this show financially through our AV club. You could learn, I'm not going to get into that. You can learn more by going to schoolsucksproject.com/AV. But if people like that hear the host of the show, the creator of the show, lamenting about the amount of money he spends on gambling, strip clubs, and cocaine, many would say, well, I don't think that's a good use of my funds. And I would agree. So that is a fictitious example. Now, some of you might be saying, I don't believe you. I think this sounds like a cover story that you came up with to back away from an accidental moment of truth in your conversation with Daryl. Okay, fine. For you, let's go into a little more detail. Let's start with cocaine. For me personally, I've always had kind of a fidgety disposition, so not really my thing. I don't see how that kind of a feeling enhances anything. Gambling, well, the house always wins, folks. Casino, 1995, directed by Martin Scorsese. Highly recommend you check that out. And strip clubs. Okay, to me, this makes about as much sense as the food channel, which is a channel where you can watch food on your television. It just seems like something people would do to frustrate themselves. So I hope that clears things up, okay? And from there, we can move on. All right. I hope you're finding this information useful and helpful. And of course, I look forward to your feedback at schoolsucksproject.com. Also, I posted on our Facebook page recently, before I found that clip that I used at the beginning of the show today, I was asking people to send me some ridiculous Facebook debates in screenshot form so I could act them out at the beginning of the show. And I want to say thank you to a listener named Shane who did send a couple along. Unfortunately, the one that I wanted to use, one of the commenters was just relying a little bit too heavily on the C word. And I didn't really want to say that or read that on the show. So I decided against it. I think it's a good choice. But I want to say thanks to Shane for his efforts. They are definitely noted. I also want to say thank you so much to everyone who has been watching or sharing or liking or even commenting on the Best of John Taylor Gatto video series. And if you are a monthly subscriber to the AV Club, or if you are a member of the Tragedy and Hope community, I highly recommend you check out the research discussion that we did on Friday, November 22nd, on the Kennedy assassination. Right at the top of the webpage right now, there is the full enhanced video version. And I want to say thank you so much to Rich, who you know, Kevin, who you know, Kevin Cole, and somebody from their community named Ben, who also participated in what I think is a really amazing presentation. So if you are, you know, a paying member, I hope you'll check that out. You know, a couple of things that I have coming up. Might be doing some Free Talk Live again later this week. I'll keep you posted on that. Did a little program called Puke in the Gang yesterday. I don't recommend that for most of you. And this coming Saturday, I will be doing a live show at 11 p.m. Eastern called ALP. It was the show that I was on before where we discussed the Iron Curtain, East Germany, the Stasi, Anthony Sutton. I thought it was a very cool conversation. And we will be talking about conspiracy theorists versus skeptics, unless the topic changes between now and then. So that's some stuff that's coming up. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening and for your participation. Here we go.
So, Daryl, welcome back.
Thanks, Brett.
One of the goals of the show here is hopefully people listen to School Sucks and they walk away and they say, my life is a little more wonderful now that I've heard that, that I've experienced that, I've learned something. And one of the most exciting discoveries for me over the course of the last 6 months or so is that there seemed to be a process that was underlying a lot of these new methods that I was trying to better understand and apply in my life. And obviously, the Trivium has been something I've pursued for some time, NVC even longer, going back years. And recently, I was introduced to David Allen's Getting Things Done. All of these methods and practices seem to have this 1-2-3 process to them, even though they're not that simple, but generally speaking, they can be distilled down to a 1-2-3 input, process, output. And I like that simplicity. It took some of the intimidation away as far as learning something new. And I was really excited when I discovered your work related to merging the Trivium method with nonviolent communication. So the first thing I wanted to ask you, and we're going to get into a discussion of NVC, its history and applications here in a minute, but why did you see this as something that was important to do? Why did you see this as an important pursuit?
My short answer is that this is important because it seemed to be the number one thing to help me feel more internal equilibrium is utilizing these two methodologies in sync together consistently all the time. And since you mentioned David Allen's Getting Things Done methodologies, which I've just begun studying, I noticed, hey, there was another thing that took care of a major source of anxiety, the mounting to-do list, these actual projects, tasks, and often obligations that are popping up here and there, requiring the application of a methodology. So Essentially, it came down to this, Brett. I was looking for greater interpersonal and especially internal equilibrium, that of the balance. And I found, hey, I need simple methodologies like you were describing, grammar, logic, rhetoric, nice and simple, a three-step input, processing, output. And NVC has also a similarly simple methodology. So the first step, of course, just like with all of our Trivium-type shows, is we need to start with the who, what, where, when of NVC. Mm-hmm. I think I could just go ahead and give you the history and applications. NVC was discovered by Marshall Rosenberg, himself a student of the methods of Carl Rogers. Rosenberg began codifying the foundational aspects of nonviolent communication in 1972 using the format known as Observations, Feelings, and Action-Oriented Wants, WANTS. Dr. Rosenberg then connected the relevance of the emotion being felt by an individual to the values and desires, which I would call motivating factors, which that person possessed. By 1992, this had been made into the main format, OFNR, Observations, Feelings, Needs, and Requests.
I do want to say, too, here, now that we've introduced it, that this also, like Getting Things Done, has an anxiety-reducing effect, a prescription-free anxiety reduction strategy because I think this is something where, you know, a lot of social interactions, especially where there's that emotional component, can generate a lot of uneasiness for people. And being able to go through these steps, which we're going to do in more detail in a minute, can really help clarify. It can take a lot of the mystery out of interpersonal communication. And it seems like in all of these cases, whether we're talking about getting things done, the trivium or NVC, anxiety comes from the unknown. And there's a lot of unknowns in our interpersonal communication, and a lot of people skip right over them.
Right. And I wanted to say that this is a methodology, so keeping this in mind, all of these things that we've just discussed are methodologies. You can't go and say, what does the trivium say about nuclear prohibition? What does NVC say about rape going on in prisons? That's ridiculous. NVC is a methodology. It doesn't say anything. People say things. So keeping this in mind, that's just one of the first aspects of trivium use. We just understand, what is it that we're speaking of? Has an abstraction been referred to? Because if an abstraction, such as, you know, say, society or people has been referred to, or such a, like, giving a personification to a methodology, that's a problem. And that's why I generally am always saying, please learn the trivium first. And then from there, you can see that, yes, NVC is very, very trivium friendly. It's ready to go. It's ready out of the box.
So we want to start here at the beginning with observations, right? And this really connects to the grammar aspect of the trivium.
Right.
So observations, the definition is that at this point, we're taking things in. Right? We're doing it without evaluation, just as a camera sees it. And observations might include things like nonverbal communication, facial expressions, and then other things like tone of voice.
Yeah, observations pretty much are all of the five senses. Every bit of it. It's completely the grammar stage. It's everything coming in. And of course, there comes to the moment of awareness. So when most people are thinking observations, they're thinking about what specifically that they would like to make mention of or that they're taking note of, because they're thinking of having to respond to that observation. So it partially is that way, but observation includes all of the five senses coming in. It is, like you mentioned, as a video camera would see it. That means that there's no evaluation going on. There's no putting things in boxes quite yet. It's except for like the box of which sense picked that one up, basically. So, you know, facial expressions, body language, that's information coming in about oneself, if you can be that self-aware, or about the person that is you're speaking to.
Now, I do feel like this, you know, stage of communication is certainly in many cases skipped over or done very hastily. And sometimes what becomes wrapped up, like when somebody is having a conversation with somebody else, what becomes wrapped up with observations done very quickly is some kind of judgment, like, oh, this person's getting angry, you know, and it's very simplistic, and they're not really experiencing or paying attention to what's going on.
I wanted to just add something besides that. It's very important to understand that observations could be even more than the five senses. For example, thoughts such as this person is getting mad would be something that you would note and observe. You know, that would be an internal thing right there. The adult can handle all types of thoughts such as this. They just don't have to speak them out loud, basically. A child is learning the nuances of that, and that's the difference.
But you would also agree that sometimes people are sort of talking past what's alive in the other person.
That's exactly the same thing as grammar being done very hastily, or people just using declarative sentences coming from someone else and calling that their grammar work. You know, that's what I've certainly heard Richard Grove mention before, that, you know, taking in a declarative sentence and said, because this expert said so, is a very poor version of doing your grammar work. In the same way, where you're taking in the observations, maybe just a few observations, and then focusing upon one of the thoughts, this person is angry. Which is, you know, of course, an evaluation. It's important to do that, but there's so much going on. And that is usually the problem right there. You know, people don't know their trivium method. And certainly then they're going to be a little bit hasty with their observations in their NVC application.
And you use the phrase internal and external, and I just want to reiterate that because observations applies to what's going on in us, too, when we're communicating. We're not standing there in a lab coat with a clipboard just watching what somebody else is doing. We are an active participant in this interaction, and stuff is alive in us as well.
Absolutely. Unless you have absolutely no feelings, no values and desires going on, then you're also a part of that. So the internal and external application of all of these skills is what I'm emphasizing, primarily internal. So as an example, Marshall Rosenberg did an excellent job of writing all of these things down and promoting them around the world. However, his book, it starts on chapter 9 is self-empathy, and I can tell you that that is not where I would start with self-empathy. I think that's very a primary job to start internally. So the internal-external applications of all of these concepts that we're going to keep covering as we go over OFNR is very critical to the skilled use of these tools.
Mm-hmm. From there, we would move on to feelings.
Feelings, by this I meant the names of the emotions, such as frustration, sadness, anxiety, excitement, joy, etc. These are the relatively intangible and abstract concepts that are attempts at describing very palpable and subjectively felt situations within our body and within our mind. So, you know, it's not, I'm just, you know, essentially paraphrasing some of what anyone would use as a dictionary definition of feelings. There are lists of feelings for those who are actually not very literate in feelings. In other words, for those who are not very skilled at the swift identification internally of what they are feeling. Without the identification of what one is, oneself is feeling, it becomes very tricky to identify what someone else is feeling. And usually that thing about they're angry, you know, judging by those aspects of the typical anger, you know, frowning, a loud voice perhaps, those types of postures that would indicate some level of frustration and hostility, that's a surface level emotion. So if you're skilled or you're more literate with your feelings, you'd have a facility to be able to name more than just a surface level feeling. You could go deeper and see what's going on behind that. Usually there's more emotions than just the one. There's usually two or more going on simultaneously. The person just might be mostly focused on one aspect of that. Mm. Just wanted to interject one more thing, Brett. This is useful. If you want to get more literate or explicitly understanding of feelings, there are lists of feelings that are helpful if you really are not skilled at being able to quickly identify what you are actually feeling or other people are feeling. Then you can go to the Center for Nonviolent Communication, cnvc.org. There's a feelings inventory, and that's something that's helpful.
And I just want to pause here for a second and call back to our Trivium discussion that I had with Gino Denning. And he said, the more practiced you become in using the Trivium, the more it becomes a natural and almost automatic process that runs in the background. And as new things are absorbed by the senses, you can immediately get those wheels turning and they're integrated into that process. And what I hope will happen here is something very similar with NVC, that this is something that will go on in the background. And I've talked about how helpful it has been as a language we speak to ourselves really before we are using it with other people. But what we've covered so far, observations and feelings, usually translates into this script that we've heard. And when a lot of people were introduced to NVC, they said, I don't like this. It's very prescriptive. It sounds unnatural. It sounds like people are doing Mad Libs. And I'm hoping that by going through it in more detail, we make it more of that automatic process and less of that script. But as far as the script is concerned, just as a reference point, so far we've covered I see, observation, you are feeling blank, right? So I've made an observation and you are feeling or I am feeling. This is more detail on that first line of that old NVC script that I think people have heard. And this is maybe a reason why a lot of people initially rejected it, because they didn't really understand the method that was behind a clunky script.
A very clunky script indeed. And as soon as people can just dump that script into the quiet part of their mind, the adult part of their mind that runs this script quietly without saying any of it out loud to anyone, well, I would say there'd be a whole lot more proficient NVC users out there. It does really come down to the aspect of not just I see this, and then I see that you are, apparently there's a feeling going on. I see these things, and then the feeling, I've identified anger. I think the most important person to identify feelings for, of course, is oneself. And after mm-hmm. that's done, I would say after all of this process of OFNR is done internally, then is the time to do external applications of this method.
Right, right. And if NVC is something that we try to apply to these continuous arguments that we found ourselves in, we wouldn't say, okay, great, well, now I have a script that I can take to those arguments and make them placid. We start internally and we say, why am I doing this? And we try to understand for ourselves what our motivating factors are in those kinds of interactions. And maybe suddenly we find we don't need NVC for those other interactions because they don't exist in our lives anymore.
Oh, pretty much.
Or they're minimized considerably.
I would say this. It's always a tool to go on, and the most important person to apply the tool to is oneself. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a more important application for these skills.
All right. So we began with observations, which were tangible. We then move into the intangible with feelings. Behind feelings, there are needs, including intangible values, desires, and motivating factors. You mentioned, Daryl, that there were useful lists as resources. Can you tell people where they could track those down again?
Well, anyone who looked up NVC needs inventory on any search engine would find them, although you could also go to the Center for Nonviolent Communication.org or CNVC.org and look up the needs inventory list. I would have to say that besides just being an abstract concept, meaning that if you look at these lists of needs, things such as autonomy, connection, communication, intimacy, etc., they are not including any tangible strategies, which mm-hmm. is done on purpose in this way, because they're not including something that's very solid and that involves actual proper nouns or specific individuals or actual tangible situations. It leaves you having lots of space and room to try to devise a win-win scenario, the ostensible goal mm-hmm. of connected communication or nonviolent communication. So when it comes down to this word needs, which I think has great definition wobble for many people, I prefer right. motivating factors. I prefer to say values and desires when I'm speaking plainly, and I say motivating factors when I'm speaking with someone who seems to have a greater grasp of words and they can essentially go for the larger syllables. I'm saying that because needs often is equated for people as physiological needs, air, shelter, water, etc. I'm speaking of those as also needs, as that goes into that, you know, quote, needs. But I'm also speaking of values and desires, things that were generated long ago in childhood or more recently as something that was more as a newfound value, such as I had a newfound value for emotional and intellectual equilibrium, Brett. That's why I crafted the essay I sent to you and others. That's why I'm continuing to do this work.
And in other words, to go through a reverse engineering process, like when we're dealing with somebody else, obviously we observe them first. From those observations, we move on to trying to understand what feelings are behind what we see and experience tangibly. Behind those feelings, we try to get at what their motive or try to get an understanding of what their motivating factors are. But in the reverse engineering sense, we have unmet needs that are often not identified, that are often not explicit, and the inability to meet those needs or even to define those needs leads to feelings that are often uncomfortable, and then some kind of manifestation of action or consequence in reality. So that's going both ways, internal and external.
Exactly.
If we are dealing with somebody else, and we've gone through the first three, observations, feelings, and needs, we come to requests.
This refers to the actions, whether kinetic, which is spoken or written words usually, or actual tangible actions that are three-dimensional, or potential, such as plans of action spoken silently to oneself. Here's the thing I wanted to very much put in there. Requests is something that this was a communication tactic. That's what Marshall Rosenberg devised this as, basically. What I would probably put into there is I would put that fourth one and call it action. And that means kinetic action or potential action. And I would have to say that the importance I would place upon this is internal. All of this being done internally. What do I observe? How am I feeling? What motivates that feeling based on my values and desires? Okay, I identified that. What's the strategy that I'm going to take? All of this is done silently. And then I've noticed that when I apply this, which can get faster and faster and sometimes take up the space of parts of a second, then it becomes, I'm feeling more settled. I feel the equilibrium. I feel that harmony of like, I can handle this now. And then I take it and flip it around to part two. This other person, what are they, how do they observe the situation? Can I tell what they're feeling? And often, you know, body language, voice tone, choice of words within text, these things start giving it away, what they're feeling. Can I figure out, based upon the feeling, what it is that they're after, their values and desires at the moment? Usually, more and more so, yes, I can start to figure out that. I can ask specific pointed questions going in that direction. We'll get to that soon, called bridging. But the further aspect is I can see what are they requesting of me, that final aspect of their action, basically. And a lot of times when people are making a demand, which we're going to get into in part two, that is basically a tragic method of making a request of someone. When someone really is demanding something, what they're actually also saying is, I really desire this. So it's very much the OFNR, internal, external, is the first half of the application of nonviolent communication.
And it also seems like a good step-by-step to better practice of empathy.
Right.
And what I mean by that is I've lived, unfortunately, a portion of my life with my ASS on fire, you know? And when that's your condition, whether it's caused by stress or anxiety or other factors, you're not very useful to other people. And if you can walk through this process for yourself first in this step-by-step manner of you know, reverse engineering down to what's the next relevant action or what's the appropriate course of action that I need to take to no longer see these things that are showing up in my life. Like, why do I gamble all my money away and do coke and go to strip clubs? Okay, so, well, I'm feeling you know, anxious, uncertain. I need stability. I need security. So how can I achieve it? And practicing that, this goes back to just like internal first is just the thing that I've stressed with this since it was first introduced to me years ago. If you go through that process with yourself, and it's something, it has to be practiced and you have to keep doing it to make it stick. Because it doesn't, you don't just learn it and have it be automatic. If you go through that practice with yourself, then I think it becomes more automatic in your dealings with others. That you'll walk through this OFNR with that, or what do they need at the end more readily if you've practiced doing it with yourself.
Exactly. And when some people suddenly learn that what they are feeling is just a symptom based upon what it is that they value and desire, there's freedom in that knowledge. Whereas before, the feelings were just coming from some random thing, an observation, and to see and connect the dots between what they observed, the actual five senses, what they observed and what actually came in, and what they were feeling, it seems so powerless, basically, because you can't control what you're observing. You're just observing it. But if you connect that to an actual value or desire, these abstractions also, then there's potential to make an actual plan that is better suited for creating the equilibrium. Now, so the coke and the strippers, there was some obviously desire to get things done. You know, you're getting nice and coked up, so you're all pepped up and you're able to get a lot of things done. And hey, while you're let's have some intimacy and some connection needs met with the go to the strip club. There are other strategies to meet those same needs. They probably are better strategies, I would have to say. Many NBC people I've heard say, it triggered me when this person said that. And in a way, it's in denial of what is actually going on, meaning your values and desires are the trigger in reality. The observations come in, the values and desires are the thing that creates the emotion. Because as anyone who would change what is valued and desired finds out, the emotions change when the values and desires change, not the other way around.
So, Daryl, tell me, in your opinion, the worst sentence in the world and why.
Here it is. When you do insert observation, I feel, insert your feelings into the sentence, because my need for, insert the need, is not being met. Would you be willing to insert a request so that my need for, insert previous need, can be met? It is so horribly distancing. And to understand why this sentence creates such, I would say, disconnection, both internally and externally between people, it's very important to go into the 4Ds to understand why this would happen in the first place.
This was also the sentence that generated the sentence, stop NVCing me.
Yeah, exactly. And as if you were constantly naming someone's logical fallacies, it'd be like, stop triviuming me, you know? And that's ridiculous. It's like, you know, the purpose of the logical fallacies is an internal silent flag. And if someone gives you explicit permission to speak of them, to say, hey, Brett, you know what? Anytime I use an informal logical fallacy, please tell me, preferably, you know, off the air. But, you know, in this case, right now, you have permission now to tell me because I'd like to know because I'm aiming to improve myself. But and if I didn't give you that permission, you could imagine that that would be very uncomfortable.
And you think that people trying to communicate with others using this terrible sentence that we just read is maybe the result of a failure to understand and really be conscious of what these 4Ds of disconnected communication are, because it's really an example of them.
Right. This sentence could be conflated or equivocated, confused for making a demand. It could be confused for denial of responsibility at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
Other confusions could happen as well. So this is the problem. People are using something called street NVC, essentially where they're just asking questions that are cleverly done and then trying to reiterate back to the person whatever it is that they're feeling or whatever it is that they're needing.
Mm-hmm.
The part about reiterating what someone is valuing or desiring, aka needs, that is actually, I would find, a very valid thing because it's speaking to what's relevant to the person usually, and it's often speaking to the subtext of the conversation or the subtext of the discussion going on.
Right.
The speaking of what someone else is feeling is likely to be taken by many people as an intrusion. This is a private matter for many people. If someone is not interested in having their feelings exposed or spoken of, that would be going into a space that's, you know, essentially forbidden. And that is completely a person's internal prerogative to say whether they want to have that exposed verbally or not. So the sentence we just went over, when you do this, I feel this, it's essentially saying, I want you to please help me with my own feelings because I wanted to just, instead of me taking care of all of that silently on my own, as an adult would, I would like your help with this because I'm having such difficulty with it right now. That could be valid if people really care about each other. But for people who don't care about each other, you might say that there's not much of a bridge between them, then that is very problematic. And that's why I would call it the worst sentence of NVC ever.
And a lot of us are trying to, when we were introduced to this, it seemed like it would be useful in situations that were tense, right? Where there was already action and there was already trouble. And putting something like that into a conversation where tensions and emotions are already high because something has happened to force that sentence out of one of the people involved in the conversation, right? It's probably at that point, it's not going to go over. All of the things that you've pointed out as being problematic about it are probably what the other person is going to experience most readily.
Right.
You know, you're making a demand. You're not taking responsibility. And that might not even occur consciously to them. But first of all, aside from the fact that it sounds very foreign, it has numerous problems that are just, it's not going to be inserted in a way that pacifies a tense conversation.
Not at all.
Which is why people said, because they didn't understand, just to reiterate what we talked about earlier, because they didn't understand the grammar of this method, they just came up with this diagnosis that doesn't work. This isn't good.
Yep. The usual poor grammar.
Right. So let's flesh out a little better here the four Ds. We mentioned them last week, but hopefully now people have a better context into which they can fit.
Right.
And we can start with demands. And this is pretty much the opposite of making requests. And when we make requests, that is an opportunity for each individual to respect the other. And they have a choice.
Right. A demand is simply an unfortunate or often tragic, often counterproductive method of displaying what is being desired. So for someone who's proficient in this, meaning that no words are going to easily come in and hurt them, not easily, that means that you can instantly be interpreting a demand as, that's what this person is actually after and desiring. I see now. They're tipping their hand. It's like in the poker game of discussion, they just basically just showed their flush right there. And now I understand what to bid because, you know, again, I'm not in competition with them. I'm here to help them out, you know, and help myself out. Good fences make good neighbors, so their words do not have to connect with me. A demand is necessarily a brilliant way of creating a barrier between two people, a barrier so that there's less caring going on between two people. And that's the first D.
Yeah.
Diagnoses, unrequested diagnoses, these are the unasked for labels, adjectives, and they are often interpreted as deeply or undesirably critical in a less than helpful way. Giving people a name, you know, you're a sports fan is a diagnosis. You know, I'm giving you a label. I can't believe you're a sports fan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, why do you waste your time with that?
And some, you know, like you...
And you're just a sports fan. And it connects with you because, you know, gosh, Brad, I know that in some ways you do cover sports. So that one actually can have a chance of connecting. Whereas if I was claiming that you're homophobic, mm-hmm. That's the diagnosis that doesn't connect very well because you don't have any actual evidence to show that you are in your mind. You know, you haven't given yourself that diagnosis. So when I throw it back at you, it doesn't really stick very well.
Right.
The point of diagnoses, besides the fact that it's another D, is it's giving a label. And unfortunately, as an unrequested diagnosis, there's no explicit understanding that this was asked for, and there's no treatment plan that's connected to it. It's not functionally usable. So that's another problem usually that happens with diagnoses.
And I've felt in the past and caught myself doing this too, that there's a certain comfort associated with making a diagnosis. To say, oh, you're one of those people. I know how to deal with you already. That kind of a thing. That seems to be pretty common because then you can put somebody into this trap where you feel like you've already come up with an aggressive strategy for knocking their arguments down. So if you can just get them into that box or into that diagnosis, you win, air quotes.
Yes. It's nothing like that aspect of having the hasty generalization fallacy applied to another person. You know, there's nothing like the power of putting them into a box. Then you could reach for your zinger since you know where now which box they're in. So you could get them. You could catch the look of cognitive dissonance on their face and go, ooh, and rub your hands together. Like, job well done. You know, another person alienated, you know.
Again, examination of the internal motivating factors makes all of this not a non-issue, I think. A lot of these interactions that we're describing.
Yeah, these things happen in ignorance of those factors.
Absolutely. So from there, we move on to the third D, which is deserve-oriented language. And these are words that are designed to basically describe extrinsic motivating factors, punishments and rewards, which we've talked about so many times before, and to demonstrate the abdication of personal responsibility, as well as emphasizing obligations of the other person. So you ought to be locked up. You should be ashamed of yourself. Or the reverse, I guess, would be, you've been a good boy. Here's your reward.
Right. It's an extension of the final D of denial of responsibility. Basically, it's just the use in language to create that extrinsic motivating factor to basically focus upon the outside rather than internal learning, which is what all of this basically is. Like each of these Ds, there are methods of a barrier between individuals, but internally, when these four Ds are said to oneself, that's the sadness that happens. I'll never be, oh man, compared to Brett, I'll just never be that good of a podcaster. You know, of course, I haven't even, you know, like spent the years of massive effort and investment that you have. But, you know, these little like moments of I just gave myself a diagnosis. I didn't put the work in. So I guess I don't even deserve to be as good of a podcaster as you, Brett. You know, it goes into these methods of internal, external application. And like you mentioned, if you do the OFNR work already, these melt away. They don't have that much power anymore. That final D is the denial of responsibility, and that is the use of words to openly declare the abdication or refusal to hold any responsibility for any actual emotion that's going on. You made me feel so mad, I had to yell at you. It was all your fault. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Denying responsibility, it's, you know, whether one way or another, there are lengthy pages going over the four Ds that you can look up on the internet, the four Ds of disconnected communication. There are actually many places that you can look these up. I think that it's very simple. This is often called jackal language in NVC jargon. In NVC jargon, you know, the use of these many terms, basically, jackal is the animal that stays low to the ground and speaks directly coming from these places, basically. Completely the opposite of the giraffe, where they're very high above the ground. They've got the biggest heart of any land mammal. So just, you know, these are just little concepts, basically. But I think it's very important to see that to label someone as a jackal and give them that diagnosis would be just as counterproductive as any type of diagnosis.
So moving on from the four Ds, when people are really conscious of those four steps in communication that we talked about, the observations, feelings, needs, and requests or actionable strategies, both internally and externally, you've described this as a perspective of abundance. And I like this. Can you talk about this for a couple minutes?
Yeah, I'll do that. When I first began studying NVC, I was looking into what it meant by a win-win scenario. This was something where a desire was being expressed for people to use these skills to create a strategy of action, essentially to make their requests in such a way as it would be actually win-win for all concerned individuals. So I basically found more words to put a label on that. I called it an abundance perspective, meaning a win-win scenario is being envisioned and engineered. And I was looking through the lens of and also rather than either or, which I identified as a scarcity perspective and win-lose or lose-lose scenarios. So what I'm trying to do is envision and then engineer an actual win-win scenario. I'm looking through and also, meaning I have my perspective, they can have their perspective. That's their prerogative to take whatever perspective they want, including the scarcity model of there can be one winner and one loser. This is like Highlander all over again. Mm. And instead, I'm looking to say, okay, the abundance perspective is so large, I can include in my abundance perspective room for them to hold their scarcity perspective. I'm looking to basically create more of a preferable situation and communicate this to all relevant people. Basically, I'm looking to just understand and explicitly spell out that I at least can take 100% responsibility for my own feelings, but other people don't. I can understand that and I can accept that. And I can start from that premise until I see evidence that someone is taking 100% responsibility for what they feel. So the abundance perspective includes that. It just is that aspect of, I see everything going on. I know my feelings. I'm in charge of what I value and desire. And based on what I value and desire, that's what I emotionally feel. And I'm going to take steps now. This is what I meant by the abundance perspective. I'm looking for many different options. So I can lay one, I can lay three options out. I can lay five. I can give them to myself silently and say, here's what I'm going to do. And then I'll focus on the other person. I can see what they're after, where they're trying to get to, and I can see if there's any way that there can be a win-win scenario to engineer.
And one of the reasons why I want to spend a few minutes on this, when I was doing my Trivium series with Gene, he repeatedly encouraged me to embrace an also and perspective, which is exactly what you're talking about here.
Yeah, I like that. And we can note the use of the four Ds in the other person in the same way that we note the OFNR of the other person. Once we've done this internal work, OFNR, internally, the four Ds is running like a virus scanner in the same way with our Trivium mind that we've got our informal logical fallacy scanner working. You know, we've got, like what I mentioned earlier, with the grammar scan working, we've got our logic scan working, we have a rhetorical triangle scan working. We have this one working too, and so when we see these things, what the other person says, if they give any of the four Ds, we can see, just like in the poker game, they're tipping their hand in terms of what they're after. One of the old NVC adages is that pretty much everything everyone says is just some version of please and thank you, saying, please can I have this, or thank you, I enjoyed that. Of course, it comes out all twisted, you know, when it's something that obviously is mixed up with the four Ds.
That is actually a really interesting thing to keep in mind. I'm really glad you said that. And when we look for balance in our lives and our relationships, and we strive, hopefully consciously, to be exchanging value with other people, we want to be in relationships that we benefit from. But obviously, the people we care about, we want them to benefit from their relationships with us. That's an interesting piece of meta talk to try to become conscious of right there, to say, okay, am I using language to say, please do this for me? Or am I using language to say, thank you, and here's me reciprocating? I think that's a very interesting thing and a very useful thing to keep in mind in our personal and professional relationships right there.
I agree. I think it comes down to understanding the strategy that's going on. And everything we've been covering is strategic. That's why I often am referring to NVC as tactics or tactical applications, because they are procedural. That's true. You know, it's a four-step. And then, of course, it's another four-step, and then it's an internal and an external application of both of those. It doesn't take very long to make that instant habitual, in terms of months of practice, I mean. But it does take an actual grasping of what these things are, and to take away the mystery of who knows why I'm feeling things, you know, ooga booga. You know, we're taking away that mystery of emotions and saying, you know what? We can figure out why we're feeling things, because we can empirically design a test to figure out if you remove something that you actually value, the feeling will change. If you remove something you desire, you know, if that is no longer a desire of yours, the emotions will change. We can empirically figure out if this is valid as a tactical application.
All right, gang, we're going to hang it there for today. Still to come in this series, we are going to talk about some relevant and useful metaphors for better understanding this process. intellectual and empathetic lenses, and strategy statements, what lines up with rhetoric in the trivium. So thanks again for listening, and happy Thanksgiving. Yep, that was a turkey.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From Wimbledon to the Astrodome. We like sports and we don't care who knows.
Football, tennis, hockey, golf.
Now when I say sports, you say nuts. Sports, nuts, sports, nuts.
When I say cheating, you say sucks. Cheating,
sucks.
Cheating,
sucks. I drink whiskey because I like the taste. You think it's bitter, but I think it's great.
I also drink whiskey and we smoke cigars. Don't believe me? Smell our cars.
We're real men and we like sports. If you say that we're not, then we'll see you in court.
I'm team captain and I choose you.
I'm the other team captain and I choose you too.
We steal the ball and we're off to the races.
Then scare the other team with our mad dog faces like
What? What?
We like sports and we don't care who knows.
From the pregame jokes
to the wrap-up show.
We like sports and we don't care who knows.